We all owe them, but very few of us know them. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities. And these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. American Warrior Radio is proud to be partnering with Silencer Central, where they've been making silence simple since 2005. Shooting with a silencer is better for your hearing and can be more fun. And owning a silencer is legal in 41 states. Visit silencercentral.com to find out if they're legal where you live, and then talk to their team of experts about your options. Silencer Central will handle all the paperwork and then ship your silencer directly to your front door once everything is approved. That's silencercentral.com. An estimated 1.5 million U.S. personnel served overseas during the Vietnam War. More than 58,000 Americans gave their lives in Vietnam. Civilian casualties are estimated to have been near 3 million persons. The war took a tremendous toll on the American psyche, dividing our country. But the toll upon those who fought there was even greater. Not only the horrors of combat, but the psychological scars of returning to a country that seemed to no longer care, or worse yet, even spit on them. Not all were wounded, but most had some kind of scars. As you may guess, I try and support veteran-owned businesses as much as possible. When I saw an ad for veteran-owned Señor Campos Salsa, I decided to give it a try. I love me some good salsa. Several days after my salsa order arrived, I received another package. It was from the owner of the company and included a book with the inscription, "Ben, I thought you might enjoy my book." Today's guest served in combat with the 199th Light Infantry Brigade from April 1968 through April of 1969. I don't want to say his life after returning home was typical. I'm certain it was not. However, it's a common enough story that we should all pay attention. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Stephen Paul Campos.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, Stephen, we try and spread guests out across the different eras. And obviously, our veterans from World War II and Korea get moved right to the front of the line. But I feel like I haven't given enough service to the Vietnam-era veterans. I've had a number of Vietnam-era veterans on, but a lot of them were up in the air in the skies, not too many down there slugging it in the rice paddies with you. And I got to tell you, your book was some enlightening stuff. Now, I found it interesting, Stephen, in your basic training class, you were one of only four men that actually enlisted. The 280 others were drafted. What were you thinking?
In 1967, I was experiencing a lot of difficulty. I was newly married. I was drinking a lot. I was getting into a lot of trouble. And at that particular time, if you're going to college, they wouldn't draft you. And I had my first report card in June, and my first report card said I was flunking and I was not allowed to go to school. So I thought I'd better go down and join before they drop me and put me in the infantry. When I went down to the recruiter, he goes, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I really don't know what I want to do, but I know what I don't want to do. I don't want to be placed in the infantry." He goes, "Well, no problem. When you go in, you'll have these different evaluations, and then he goes, "Where would you like to do your first duty station?" And I said, "Well, what choice do I have?" And he said, "Well, they can send you to Germany or they can send you to Hawaii." And I thought, "Well, gee, Germany wouldn't be too bad. And maybe if I left out, I'd go to Hawaii." So I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll join." And so within 2 weeks, I was headed out to Fort Lewis, Washington to do my basic training.
You know, recruiters always tell the whole and complete truth, Stephen, right?
I never thought that they would lie to me. So, I felt pretty comfortable about, maybe being trained into something I could learn when I got out of the military. And then I might be sent to Germany, which would be pretty good. And then I'd get out, 3 years later and do my service. So without having to serve in the infantry upon graduation from boot camp, I found out that I was being placed in the infantry. And I literally had a meltdown of fear and anxiety that day that I found out. And there was nothing I could do about it because the Army had been drilling in my head every single day that they owned me and they could do whatever I wanted. So I had to make a decision, and I made a decision that day that I would do whatever I needed to do to learn as much as I could to stay alive. And that's how I made it through basic training and advanced infantry training. And after that, I was sent to the 199th Light Infantry Brigade, who was training to go to Vietnam. And we left to go to Vietnam April the 3rd of 1968.
So I don't do math in public, Stephen, but how long from when you graduated from basic infantry training before you were shipped out to Vietnam? Not that long, sounds like.
I graduated from basic training, and I think it was in, say, I did August, September, October. I started advanced infantry training in November, the first part of November, December, and then the first part of January, I was sent over to the 199th. So we left in April, April 3rd. I was with them for just a few months, and we were all green. Nobody had been to Vietnam before. Everybody was fresh, except for two people, our company commander and one sergeant that had been to Vietnam. The rest of us had never been in combat before. We were considered green.
Now, you've written a series of books, and the one I read was called Charlie Doesn't Live Here Anymore. What was the inspiration for that title, Stephen?
In 2004, I met my Vietnam buddy in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and we hadn't seen each other for 37 years. I kept in contact with one buddy that I had lived close by in Sacramento because I lived in Modesto, California. And so we kept in contact with each other. 2 weeks after we got into Vietnam, we were in a firefight with our own company. Our two platoons got separated, and it was pitch dark at night. And that was during the second Tet Offensive, and there was enemy contact going all around us. Everybody was nervous, and we got separated from our other two platoons. We ended up getting into a firefight with our own other two platoons, and it was just a horrific firefight. Our company commander, he wasn't mortally wounded, but he had both his legs shot off. But there were about three killed and a couple of wounded, and it just was a traumatic event. So I was the radio operator for my lieutenant, and my other best buddy, Eric, he was the radio operator for the platoon sergeant, and then my other buddy was a sergeant, Dykoff, and the three of us got together. We were told to stand down by the brigade because we had gone to this horrific firefight with each other. So we were told to take our magazines, place them down on the ground, and wait for Alpha Company to come over and that would help us out because our company commander was wounded. And during the midnight hours, the three of us were so scared that we just kind of got together and we decided that we would protect each other while we're in Vietnam unto death if it needed to be, because that's kind of what the reaction was at that particular point, and that we would reunite after the war. And so 37 years later, after the war, the three of us had got together to honor our fellow combat brothers that were killed, and that was in 2005. So we met together at the Vietnam War Memorial, and at that time, the newspaper reporters were contacted, the Washington Post, and they had a photographer, and they came over and ran our story, and it was just amazing that we were able to tell our story for the first time. I hadn't talked about Vietnam ever since we got together in 2004, when I met my Vietnam buddy. I had totally forgot about it. I wanted nothing to do about my Vietnam combat service. I was just in the mindset of being happy and just forgetting about the Vietnam War and everything until that point when we got together. And that was just an amazing time of getting together and talking about our experiences.
Steve, we're going to have to pause here for a minute for a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what you're just recovering and then, of course, talk about your time in country in Vietnam. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Stephen Paul Koppel. Stephen served for a year with the 199th Light Brigade in Vietnam. Stephen, just before we took the break, we were talking about the, 37 years later, you got together with some of your other surviving buddies, and that was in 2005. You mentioned that you said you forgot, maybe a better word would be repressed, your memories of your combat in Vietnam. You didn't want to talk about it. You didn't want to deal with it. At which point did you decide to write Charlie Doesn't Live Here Anymore?
So that was when we met at the Vietnam War Memorial. We started talking about the things that we did together in Vietnam, and it just brought back all these memories and fresh feelings about my Vietnam experience. Like I said, I didn't want to talk about Vietnam, didn't want to have anything to do with Vietnam or the military until that point when we got together to talk to the reporter. And I felt so proud at that particular moment of the three of us being together. It was almost like deja vu. We were sent back to Vietnam at that very moment, being able to tell our story to the public and to be able to help other Vietnam veterans, because there are so many Vietnam veterans that hated their service, didn't want to talk about it, that were got involved in drugs and alcohol and totally messed up about the Vietnam War. So it was then, after we met together, that I started recalling the events. And my girlfriend, which is now my wife, Kathy, she said, well, maybe you should start writing about this. I'd never written anything before. I'd actually like write poems. And so I wrote these different poems and to her. And she said, hey, well, why don't you decide to start writing about that? And so that's when I started placing all my thoughts and feelings together and start writing it. And it was published in 2009. I had a ghostwriter because I'm really bad at spelling and not very good at punctuation because I never really liked school anyway. And they helped me put the format together. And in 2009, it was published.
Folks, you can learn more. Visit StephenPaulKoppelsBooks.com, Kampos, C-A-M-P-O-S. Hey, you've got a number of books up there, but like I said, Stephen, the one I've read was Charlie Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Let's talk about your time in Vietnam, because I think that's part of, maybe for some of the other era listeners out there, and hopefully it's cathartic, and certainly it's educational for the younger generations there. Your story, elements of your book reminded me of the interviews I've done with World War II veterans who served in the Philippines, in that outside of the enemy, which was bad enough, there was always something waiting to jump you in the jungle. And the rains, the amount of, just sleeping in the mud and the rain alone, I think it's hard for a lot of us civilians to imagine. Now, as the radio operator, did you get first dibs on high ground when that happened, just to be able to protect the equipment?
I did. I got a little more protection. We'd have to sit on empty boxes of meal rations that we were served. So sometimes, yeah, we had to be a little bit higher up and protect our radios. But, yeah, it was a frightening experience. It was not just the rain, but what was in the water, crawling in the water, and snakes. There were cobras. There were bamboo vipers that could kill you within 30 seconds. There were scorpions. We had people that were bit, by scorpions and whatever kind of eerie insects, So, yeah, it wasn't just about fighting the enemy. It was really fighting all the elements, being in Vietnam, and the dysentery, the water. We had to take salt tablets with us, dehydration. Just there are so many different elements of being killed. Every single day seems to last like an eternity. Some days you go through feeling that you wanted to die. You didn't want to go through all of this. And then as you got closer to make it home and to come back, then you start becoming even more afraid that you're going to die. So there are different times and elements of fear that you had to deal with daily.
A knucklehead like me would say, well, if it's wet on the ground, just climb up on a low-hanging branch in a tree. But as you mentioned before, that's where the other bad guys are, snakes and scorpions. And there's a scene from Platoon where Charlie Sheen is just getting eaten alive by these ants. And that was also a problem there. Something as small as an ant could just completely ruin your day.
Well, they were very small. They were called army ants, and they were usually, some of these were like an inch long, and they would dig right into you. And not only that, but there were leeches that would dig through you while you're walking through the water. You get tons of leeches on you. Centipedes, some of the centipedes were like probably 12 inches long. I got bit by a centipede. And so anything that got infected became a problem. Also, there was jungle rot. Everybody had jungle rot because their feet, you could never keep your feet dry enough. So everybody had jungle rot. Some people had it so bad, they had to go into the hospital. It went all the way up to their groin because it was so bad. So everybody had to deal with jungle rot as well.
I have to imagine, Steve, it's hard to maintain an effective fighting force like that. But you just carried on.
Well, there were people that called in sick. I didn't really want to call in sick because I didn't want to be a pansy. You know, being in the infantry, I didn't want anybody else to think that I was a pansy. So I never really called in sick. But there were times where that you had to call in. I had malaria one time and almost died from malaria. So I had to get out of the field for a few weeks. And then they sent me right back. But, yeah, there were other things that you had to deal with, not just the enemy.
And you cite a number of cases in your book where soldiers actually shot themselves in the foot, you know, claiming they hurt themselves cleaning their rifle. Sometimes that excuse flew, and sometimes they got court-martialed.
Yeah, we were told one time I recall that we were going into a hot LZ, where it means that you're going in from helicopters and you're landing and you're being fired at, and you just don't know, you know, what can happen. Your buddy be killed, you be maimed, you be shot or whatever. So there was that element. And, you know, a few people, in order to get out of the field, they put that bullet right through their ankle and their foot to get out of the field.
Stephen, we're about to take another break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about, well, I want to touch more upon your time there in Vietnam and some of the lighter moments, I guess, if you will, you know, things like mail call and the time that you and your friends really made Bob Hope angry. But real quick, we've just about a minute left. You talk about, you know, the alcohol, and I'm sure the drugs were prevalent over there as well. And it just that. Not necessarily escape, but just how a lot of your fellow soldiers turn to that as a way of just sort of dealing with the reality that they're in. And there's one particular story I want to share about when you're in the hospital with malaria and a patient lying in the bed next to you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Stephen Paul Campos about his experiences in Vietnam. You can learn more, visit StephenPaulCamposBooks.com. Hey, listen, do me a solid. If you like these shows, what you're listening to, please share them with your friends. Tell them they can find over 400 podcast episodes at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Also on their favorite streaming platform, we're everywhere that you can hear your podcasts. Again, we'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. You know, shooting with a silenced weapon can be more enjoyable, and it's definitely better for your hearing. Pay a visit to my friends at silencercentral.com, where they've been making silence simple since 2005. They can work with you on the paperwork, fill it out, they can even provide financing, talk to their experts about what your options are. They can ship your silencer directly to your front door once everything is approved. Silencers are legal to own and fire in 41 states. Start your journey at silencercentral.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking with Stephen Paul Campos about his experiences in Vietnam. Steve is actually quite a prolific writer. You can find the book we're talking about today, Charlie Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and various others at StephenPaulCamposBooks.com. Stephen, when you were talking about when you were in the hospital with that bad malaria, they brought in a patient and placed him next to you, and apparently he was a lifer. He had like 19 years in, And when you asked about him, I mean, 19 years in the Army, and this guy had just gotten so drunk he fell down and hit his head, and he didn't make it. And there's a certain amount of bizarre irony there.
There's a lot of things that happened in Vietnam that are really kind of bizarre anyway and unexplainable. This particular person, it was just sad, really. Sad that I couldn't do anything about it. I remember they came in, they put him in the bed, and the nurses were told to come back and report on him every hour. Well, apparently they didn't report on him for 2 hours, and it was during that time that he died, where they went in there and found that he had passed away, from the head wound, but just from getting drunk. And there was a lot of things that happened that were really unexplainable, that were hard to imagine. There's in Vietnam, there was like an evil presence, you might say, but there's also like a good presence or a feeling you get. It would warn you in your mind if there was something that was going to happen to you by instinct. You had to kind of be, we called it, you had to be, kind of like an animal, you might say, instinct-wise, to be able to sense these things that were good or were evil. And those things that you would sense kind of protected you. The longer that you were in Vietnam, the more you could kind of feel and understand things that were happening that didn't make any sense.
Mail call had to be something pretty special. You talk about that a little bit in your book. And I a lot of us, nowadays with email and Facebook and all the stuff that our military have to communicate back with their families, it seems a little bit quaint. But we forget that correspondence was heavily censored by the Army. And sometimes you get an envelope, you're pretty excited to hear from home, and it's nothing but an envelope with a note in it from the Army saying, "We censored your entire letter. Have a nice day."
We were told not to report or tell anybody where we were, what we were doing, any specific times. Due to the fact that some of these letters might be intercepted. And so we were really cautious about writing anything. And so besides that, I didn't want to really alert any of my family or tell them anything that was going on. When we did get a few things, there were care packages that a few people got that had cookies in them. They had different small snacks. Not very often did somebody get those. So usually some of the soldiers would share some of that, but we didn't really see very much. The USO did a great job, however, and then they would send in us boxes of cigarettes and chocolate and cookies. So when they came in, which was about once every 2 weeks, they would send in a box So the USO did a great job and of some of the things that they sent to us.
I was actually not even in the country when Vietnam, most of Vietnam was taking place, so I'm just getting up to speed. But, you hear about, in every war, you hear about the famous Dear John letters. And you talk about how important it was for, you and the soldier next to you, the soldier behind you, the soldier in front of you to watch each other's back. I never realized before that the Dear John letter is it's tragic because that's your brother there. You don't want to see him in pain. But then that also created dangers for the soldiers around them sometimes. Explain us more what you meant by that.
It did. It was like a death threat. One of my good friends received a Dear John letter, and his mindset went from, you could just see it. He did not care about anything, and at that point, you just didn't want to be around him because you didn't know he was going to shoot you or shoot himself or what he was going to do. So you really had to be on the alert, but it was horrible, and it's something that affected him mentally, physically, and it also affected us, and it was just a horrible experience, terrible.
Do you talk about how going in, you and most of your comrades were very green, very fresh? But I see also a trend in your book about the leadership. And, I mean, you're going through lieutenants like dirty socks. And there was even one situation where a lieutenant refused to basically disobeyed orders. And as a radio operator, you're having to communicate this to higher command. And it got pretty sketchy. And then he just finally told you to turn the radio off. And next thing you know, a helicopter comes in and he was relieved of command.
Yeah, he was afraid, you know, and just it can happen to anybody, whether you're a lieutenant, captain, or you just never knew really what would happen. And I think that he had just reached his fear point, and we were told to go out and make contact with the enemy, and he just he refused, and he told me to turn off the radio. And our company commander found out about it. The next day, they came out and replaced him, which is a good thing because he was going to get us killed just because of the fear factor. And he was replaced by another lieutenant. Kind of funny because the lieutenants, a lot of them came in right from the academy or right out of West Point. And they were really green, too, and they didn't know what to do. And a lot of times we had to train them. and we had to teach them. And sometimes it was a good thing, and sometimes it wasn't so good. But we kind of made fun of it.
Now, Stephen, does training a new lieutenant include stealing his uniforms from the laundry and making sure he realizes that spit and polish in the field is not always the best thing?
It does. We were out in the monsoons in total mud. Our new lieutenant came out with starch fatigues, and he told us to shine our boots. And nobody ever told us to shine our boots. We didn't even have any kind of polish or anything. And so what we did is we decided that we were going to place a bunch of rocks and cans underneath his air mattress one night. And so one of my buddies, he put a knife in it with a slow leak in it. So the next morning when he woke up, he woke up with a bunch of rocks and cans underneath his air mattress, so we all laughed. It was funny, but he didn't think it was so funny.
Well, I bet. Now, what's intriguing, unless I got this wrong, he actually turned out to be one of your better commanders in the field.
He did. He did. He was one of the better officers. And most of the officers were great. Great to work with, you know, and like I said, but I had just experienced that one lieutenant, which I'm glad they did replace him, but all the other lieutenants were great.
Stephen, real quick, we got to take another break, but you talked about how you were praying all the time in Vietnam that God would protect you, but I found it also interesting that you were praying that you would never have to kill anyone.
That's true.
Okay.
Yep, I didn't really want to experience that.
Let's delve into that after the next break when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Stephen Paul Campos. You can find more at StephenPaulCamposBooks.com. Also, check out SenorCamposSalsa.com, one of my favorites. We'll talk a little bit about Stephen's life after Vietnam when we come right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're speaking with Stephen Paul Campos. He's written a number of books. You can find out more at StephenPaulCampos.com. He served for a year in combat in Vietnam in the late 60s. Stephen, I don't think I've ever heard about Bob Hope actually walking off stage because you guys were so rowdy. You said you were the worst soldiers he'd performed for in 35 years of showmanship. Folks have to read more about that in your book. Let's talk a little bit about your time afterwards. You know, transition is always a very tough thing for veterans, and particularly in Vietnam, given the situation on the home front. You went through some really rough years there, Stephen, struggling with alcohol and drugs and several failed marriages. What was the breaking point for you when you finally said, you know, I've got to turn my life around?
Wow. About 14 years later, after my combat service, well, first of all, I have to explain that, you know, when I came back, we were all met by war protesters. We were really happy. Everybody on the airplane until we landed in Oakland. And then as we were getting out, people were jumping and screaming. And, you know, some people were kissing the ground. You know, it was such a great feeling to be home. And then we were met by war protesters. And that just turned everything from good to bad. I became so angry because of the war protesters. And then also when I tried to talk to my friends, my good friends that I grew up with ever since elementary school, they didn't want to hear anything about the Vietnam War. It angered me so much that I decided to disown all of my friends at that point and not speak to them any longer. And so I went into, at that particular time, there was, you know, the hippie movement, there were marijuana, people were getting high, they were, it was like good times, fun times, drinking and partying. And so I continued to do that, but I continued to get into trouble. I got pulled up by the police. I got put in jail twice. In 1981, I was going, had a relationship with a girl, and she ended up breaking our friendship together, and I hit rock bottom. I started feeling so depressed that I didn't know what to do. I'd never felt that depressed before in my life. And one night, I had a miraculous experience, a life-changing experience that is really hard to explain. After one night of drinking, that I had a spiritual awakening by God that literally transformed my life. And I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings after my spiritual awakening, and I started making meetings. I made 90 meetings in 90 days, and I started getting sober. That really helped to change my mindset, and I started involving myself around people who were becoming sober and living a sober lifestyle, and I accepted Christ as my Savior, and I started going to church and replacing it with all the bad things. And God really changed my entire life. My entire life changed. I stopped drinking. I haven't drank since 1982, and I won't drink just because of all the problems that I was involved with. But God literally changed my life through going to church, reading the Bible, trying to be the best person that I could be. But yet, I still had some issues that I hadn't dealt with, my Vietnam issues, and I started to deal with those. I only started dealing with them in 2006 after I'd been divorced four times, and my Vietnam buddy told me that I needed some help. The Veterans Administration could help veterans now. And so that's when I started to go back to the VA and I started getting some help for post-traumatic stress, prostate problems, hearing problems, Agent Orange exposure. And so I'm still getting help with that today from the VA.
Stephen, I get the impression you're doing pretty well now, and I'm really glad to hear that. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little about Senor Campo Salsa. You're a veteran. That's a veteran-owned business. You run the place. That's an old family business. It was a kind of a generational thing. How did you eventually find your way back to that family business?
Well, after I got out from the Army, I went back to work for my father. My father was the pioneer in the Mexican food industry, and I worked with him, and my goal was really just to take over the business. So I owned and operated three restaurants. Restaurant business is a lot of work and a lot of time-consuming. And my father passed away in 1995, and I started making salsa years and years ago. I started working with him when I was 14 years old. So again, like I said, my goal was to take over the business, but he sold the business. And I started making salsa, the salsa that was served in our restaurants, because we had a chain of restaurants called Senor Campos. And I always loved that salsa. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I decided to make it myself. I knew all the recipe, and I, because I cooked it and served it in the restaurants, and I decided to start giving it away. I started giving it away to my friends and my family, and I just they started, you know, wanting more of it. Every 2 weeks, they'd tell me to send more to them. So I decided, you know, maybe somebody would enjoy the salsa. And so I started about 2018, getting more and more involved with making the salsa. And then I decided that I didn't really like the tortilla chips that I like, because you can't really get really good tortilla chips in the grocery store. Some of the restaurants don't serve the ones that I really like. So I started making them myself, and it's kind of involved. Started involving adding more items, hotter hot sauces, but just trying to keep everything simple. So I put together Senor Campos Salsa and really kind of opened that to the public online only in about 2019. I do shows. I do home and garden shows. I do different events, but everything mainly is online at this point.
Now, I'm just down the road from you, so everything arrived nice and packaged and fresh, but you'll ship anywhere domestically or internationally? I mean, if there's some...
In the United States, I will.
Okay.
I don't want to ship anywhere outside the United States or Hawaii or Puerto Rico. It's just too expensive.
Too expensive. Okay, well, I'll tell you, I love the red. My wife loves the green, and I'll be putting in a second order again, folks. If you want to try some really good salsa, again, it's SenorCamposSalsa.com. Steve, we got just a couple minutes left. I've often felt that the scourge right now of suicide and the challenges that our global war on terror veterans are facing, a lot of the burden has to be carried by their fellow combat veterans. They need to get engaged. Is that kind of what you're doing as well when you're writing these books? Is that you're basically trying to tell your fellow veterans, you know, yes, it was rough, but we're here now and things can get better? Or did you have other motivation?
Yeah, the second book that I wrote was Charlie Doesn't Live Here Anymore, was When Johnny or Jane Come Home After War, which is a book more for the Afghan and also the Iraq soldiers, or any soldiers, the newer generation soldiers, because there's ways to get help through the VA. Right now there's so many different programs that the veterans have, and so when I do talk to people, I tell them there's a lot of opportunity to get help and counseling and to seek help, because everybody that serves in a war zone, it changes you. And I was really fortunate. I'm one of the fortunate ones that was able to get help by my own circumstances, really, that I were talked about to you earlier through church, but also attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And there are other meetings and churches that provide those kind of things. But that was a great help in stopping the alcohol. I think the alcohol fueled my post-traumatic stress disorder. And now the VA, they have programs, they have medications that are helpful, and just talking to people about their problems, because everybody has issues that served in a war zone.
Well, Stephen, we really appreciate you spending some time with our listeners today and sharing your story, some very powerful stuff. Again, I encourage folks to visit StephenPaulCamposBooks.com. There's also a book you have there called Manna for First Responders, which the other half of our audience I know will appreciate. Stephen, thanks again for spending your time with us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
It was my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, another great show in the can. You can find over 400 others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Please listen and share these important stories. You just heard a very powerful one here today. You can also find us on Spotify, Amazon, iHeart, wherever you stream your podcast. Just look for American Warrior Radio, and you should be able to find us right there. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. Archived episodes may be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com or your favorite podcast platform.